The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 8. Goddess Falling. The Galleria. Vittorio Emmanuel II was enormous, covering an area equivalent to several baseball fields. Its Art Nouveau style evoked the image of an orangery, or rather, an aviary. A gilded aviary for beautiful rare birds. His shoulder throbbed. The police officer had actually grazed him. It was just a minor wound, not worth mentioning. Still, he had to admit that for a moment, his world had been slightly shaken as the adrenaline faded and the pain seeped into his consciousness. He had a job to do, a mission. It was important. But were any means truly justifiable for this cause, this sacred cause? He couldn't help but smile. Undoubtedly, they were. He stood in the shadows of an alley between two boutiques. The sound of high heels clicking on Italian marble reached his ears. A slender figure, as majestic as a swan, strutted past him, not casting a glance in his direction. No one did that. He had learned to conceal his innermost feelings, just like this elegant swan. Yes, she was a swan, pure, innocent, and perfect on the outside. But the swan's flesh, known to all, was black and foul. He had seen it many times before. It was time to follow the sacred path once more. He watched as Ella Henson stopped in front of a boutique's window, paused, and eventually entered the store. God, she's beautiful, he thought. That's why she must be killed. He smiled and followed her into the shop. Catherine finally decided to repaint the boathouse after her father's visit. She drove into town, gathered the supplies, slipped into jeans and an old cotton shirt from Rich, and set to work that very afternoon. By the time the sun began to set, she had made significant progress, almost finishing the entire front of the house, its fresh white paint gleaming in the light. She needed a longer ladder for the ridge than the one she found in the stables. Catherine paused briefly to savor the view. Small boats were coming from the opposite side of the river. It took her a moment to realize they were heading straight for her property. Then she heard a low rumble that escalated into a rattling crescendo. A squadron of helicopters flew toward them. The scene reminded her of that Vietnam movie Richard loved so much. Apocalypse Now. But these helicopters were not carrying bloodthirsty soldiers. They were transporting an even colder-blooded species. Paparazzi. If she hurried, she might escape their cameras by sprinting to the main house. For the past few weeks, she had been left alone. What on earth had happened? Oh God, she whispered. Oh my God, Ella cooed in her deep voice. She had found the perfect dress. Brava, ottima scelta. Really a very good choice. The saleswoman confirmed. Dove? Ella asked, looking around for a changing room. Right over here. Grazie. She headed for the fitting cubicle. The killer must have gotten Ella too, Catherine thought as she hastily climbed down the ladder. She dropped everything and ran across the footbridge to the main house. Just then, she saw two more reporters jump out of a car. Fuck! She shouted, quickly turning around and running back to the boathouse. The helicopters had almost reached the shore by that point. Their rotor blades skimmed the river water, nearly capsizing some of the smaller paparazzi boats. "Stop! Stand still! Stay! Shoot!" a man shouted. But the noise of the rotors drowned out his words. Shoot? Did he really just shout shoot? She must have misheard him. She quickly glanced over her shoulder. The man was pulling a gun from his shoulder holster. "Don't!" shouted a woman following him. Catherine ran faster. Since when did journalists carry firearms? Suddenly, a paint bucket exploded next to her. Startled, she cried out. She was almost at the door of the boathouse when another bullet tore through the newly painted wood paneling, dangerously close to her head. Small splinters of wood pierced her cheek. She froze, transfixed. The helicopter flew a loop, likely to give the cameras a better angle. The noise quieted slightly, and now Catherine could hear the man distinctly. "Turn around slowly with your hands up," he shouted. Catherine complied. The man aimed at her head. He wouldn't miss this time. Her whole body trembled, and her legs threatened to give way. The man inched closer. The helicopter was now circling right above them. Like a tornado, the painting supplies whirled around her, spraying her with paint. The man reached her, seizing her by the shoulder and forcefully turning her around. "Arms back," he ordered. Catherine obeyed, and a few seconds later, she felt the cold steel of handcuffs around her wrists. Then the man pushed her into the boathouse. She stumbled over the threshold, and the stranger slammed her against a wall. She tasted salt from the planks. "Please," she whimpered, managing only that. "Please. Is that what your friend said when you butchered them? Please?" The man snapped. "Davis," the woman shouted angrily. "Let her go right now." "It's her, Helen. The bitch is our killer. She wanted to escape," he replied, looking as if he were waking up from a dream. "Who are you?" Catherine asked, frightened. "NYPD," hissed Davis. "What? New York Police Department?" she repeated, dumbfounded. "You shot at her without identifying yourself?" the woman screamed at him. "I identified myself. She probably didn't hear me because of the helicopter."
"Maybe she didn't hear you tell her to stop either."
"I really didn't hear you. I thought you were a reporter. What's this all about?" Catherine asked. Davis cleared his throat. "Catherine Williams, I'm arresting you for the 7 counts of murder of Inez Diega, Pete Moore, Mia Wong, Victor Adams, Vivian Lemoire, and Lauren Gramney."
"No, you're mistaken. I didn't murder anyone," she said, calm and collected.
"Miss Williams," Helen began, "you may remain silent. If you choose not to exercise that right, anything you say now can be used against you in court. You have the right to an attorney. If your financial situation does not allow for this, the public prosecutor's office will provide you with a public defender. Do you understand that?"
Catherine stared at the small woman.
"That's it," she thought. "This is the punishment for my first life." Everything came together at that moment. She had thought the loss of her child, her husband, and her skin had been enough torture. But no. This public humiliation was all she needed. Pain did not compromise. She should have known that. Andy had known. He had been wise to stop getting involved with her.
"Yes, I understand," she said, swallowing hard as a tear trickled down her cheek. Davis walked to the door.
"I suppose we have to go out there now, don't we?" Catherine asked.
"Yes, we do," Helen nodded. "I'm sorry, Miss Williams. We're going to take you to New York and put you on trial."
"Don't be sorry," Catherine replied, then realized she didn't know the policewoman's name.
"May I know your name?" she asked.
"Detective Helen Louisiani."
"Don't be sorry, Detective Louisiani. You're mistaken, but that's not important now anyway. You're just doing your duty."
"Don't let her lull you to sleep, Helen," Davis warned as he opened the door. Flashes erupted first, like looking into exploding suns, followed by the shouts.
"Catherine! Kathy! Kath! Look at us!" roared dozens of eager voices.
It was almost like a red carpet debut, but only almost. Reporters and photographers surrounded Catherine and the two detectives.
One cameraman pressed his lens against Catherine's forehead. Catherine saw the blood splatter. For a moment, everything around her turned red, then black. Payne triumphed. He shouted, "Now you're mine forever." Then darkness overcame her, and she lost consciousness. As best they could, Davis and Helen lifted the unconscious Catherine through the jostling crowd. Some paparazzi got too close to the edge of the jetty and plunged into the water like lemmings. Chaos reigned. "Well, that was something," Davis said when they were finally in the car. Catherine lay in the back seat while Helen gave her laceration makeshift treatment. "Don't talk nonsense, just drive," she shouted angrily. She couldn't shake Catherine's look and her words from her mind. "You're mistaken. But that's no longer important anyway." To Davis, that sounded like a confession. But to Helen, those words pointed in a different direction. It almost seemed as if the famous Catherine Williams was punishing herself. But for what? The laceration on her forehead eventually stopped bleeding, and small white drops of paint speckled her hair and face. Helen wondered what her secret was. The boutique was small, which seemed logical given the horrendous rents in the area. He had slipped unnoticed into the changing room next to Ella Henson's, and now overheard her transitioning from one outrageously expensive dress to the next. He contemplated how he would proceed. With the others, he had always acted in a very planned manner. By his standards, this was an impulsive act, but the opportunity was too good to pass up. He pulled the long combat knife out of its sheath and checked the partition wall of the cabin, noting its thinness, almost like cardboard. He would ask Ella something in a hushed tone, prompting her to step closer to the wall. Then he would drive the knife through the wall and into her gut. She would likely survive long enough to follow his instructions. After all, the others had done the same, and it had always worked before. Showtime. He cleared his throat and opened his mouth, about to speak, when someone beat him to it. "Scusi, Signora Henson," a deep masculine voice called. "Si," replied Ella Henson. "Sono commissario Mandretti."
"Damn it, the police."
"Che cosa vuole da me?"
asked Henson.
"Abbiamo ricevuto una richiesta dall'Interpol sulla sua sicurezza. Potrebbe uscire per cortesia."
The commissario rattled off. He didn't understand a word.
"Certo,"
Ella replied after some hesitation. He noticed her pushing something under the partition with her foot. It was a packet of cocaine. Then she opened the curtain and stepped out. He crouched down and speared the cocaine packet with the tip of the hunting knife, like an insect. He looked at it with interest. Naughty girl, he thought. Outside the cabins, Ella Henson was talking to the Italian inspector. Finally, he heard them leaving the boutique together. He sighed. So much for spontaneous actions. Now he would have to think of something else for Ella Henson. So far, he had always come up with something. After driving their prisoner to an ambulance in Easton, Helen and Davis attended to her laceration. Davis stood guard outside the treatment room while Helen accompanied Catherine. The doctor cleaned and taped the wound. "I've read Professor Winter's article about your skin graft. Your new skin regenerates unusually quickly. In a few days, there will be no sign of an injury. If Miss Williams had a graze on her upper arm, would it heal as fast as this laceration?" Helen asked. "Certainly, yes," the doctor replied, turning to Catherine. "Did someone shoot you?" She didn't look at him but into Helen's eyes as she replied, "No." Catherine and Helen exchanged a silent glance. "All right, then. I'll attend to my other patients," said the doctor, and then left. "You think I'm innocent, am I right?" asked Catherine. "Until now, I did," said Helen. "But now, to be honest, I have some doubts." "Just because of my fast-healing skin?" Catherine frowned. "But why?" "If you're the killer, you know why." "But that's the point. I'm not your killer." "We'll see," Helen replied curtly. Could it be? Could Catherine Williams have murdered her catwalk colleagues? Was it possible that a beautiful swan could turn into a vicious, cunning killer, like a perverse inversion of the fairy tale of the ugly duckling?
You're really nice, you know, said the young woman next to him.
Thank you very much, he replied. She continued to talk about her stay in Italy, and he nodded, although he wasn't really listening. He kept just the right distance from her stories. They didn't touch him, and he occasionally threw in a well-placed aha or hmm. The United Airlines plane was not full. He had an aisle seat quite far forward in economy class. He could see into first class through the half-open curtain. Ella Henson was sitting there, as beautiful as a Renaissance statue. She seemed a little nervous, ordering drinks at short regular intervals, and apparently terrorizing the flight crew with all kinds of unusual requests. At least he could tell by the rolling eyes of the flight attendants when they turned away from the supermodel. He stood up and went to her. Miss Henson. What? She barked shrilly. Please excuse the intrusion, but my friend is an admirer of your beauty and your graceful artistry on the catwalk. Ella's features relaxed. That's a nice thing to say. Where do you want me to sign? He handed her the latest magazine with her likeness on the cover. Here you go. What's your girlfriend's name?
Catherine. She's sitting over there. She didn't have the courage to speak to you. That's why I took the liberty of...
Oh, how sweet of you. So I'll write. For Catherine. Hold on to this guy tight. Such polite and handsome men are rare.
That's very kind of you, thank you so much. He beamed at her.
Ella waved to his supposed friend. The woman timidly waved back.
Perfect.
He sat back down in his seat. The young woman next to him leaned over.
Isn't that Ella Henson up there?
Yes, I got her autograph for my friend.
What did she write?
He held out the magazine to her.
Wow, said the young woman. If what it says is true, your girlfriend is really lucky.
He nodded and smiled his Tom Cruise smile. Well, I certainly hope she appreciates me.
Oh, she knows that. Women sense that sort of thing.
She put her hand on his and looked deep into his eyes.
I, for one, sense that you would never fool a woman.
He scrutinized her skin. Smooth, wrinkle-free, with a clear complexion. She was a candidate. But pursuing her would mean being unfaithful to Catherine and the others, and that would be a sin.
Thank you very much, but I...
Really not?
We could go to the restroom quickly.
Thank you for the offer, really. But that wouldn't be right.
God, you really are too good to be true. Your girlfriend is a lucky girl.
Well, he replied, I really hope you're right.
In the shadows of her mind, seven counts of murder. The goddess is about to fall, while I'm watching through it all. The goddess falling in the height of her prime. Some secrets keep on bleeding through the hands of time. The goddess bleeding, lying on the ground. One survivor gets away, another's forced to stay. The goddess silence speaks so loud. Her secrets never doubted. Some secrets keep on bleeding sands of time.
Thank you for listening. dhout.podig.io